Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Okay, so I want to start today's dive with a scenario.
Right.
Imagine you're a scientist, and you have dedicated your entire career to curing some really complex disease. You know, let's say schizophrenia or heart disease.
A noble goal.
Noble goal. And you write the grants, you beg for funding, and finally, you get it. You get access to the holy grail of modern research, big data.
Which is, I mean, that's the dream scenario for most of us. We're talking biobanks with hundreds of thousands of participants.
Exactly.
The kind of statistical power you get from that, it's just unprecedented.
Right. And the rule of thumb, you know, the one I learned back in grad school 101, it was pretty simple. More data equals better answers.
Mm-hmm.
If I survey 10 people, I might get a fluke. If I survey 500,000, I get the truth.
That's the bedrock assumption of, well, all of modern epidemiology and genetics. Bigger N, smaller error bars.
Exactly.
But I'm looking at this paper today, and it seems to be suggesting something that, frankly, just sounds impossible.
Okay.
It's suggesting that for certain types of genetic research, getting more data might actually make your results worse.
Well, it's not just suggesting it, it's mathematically proving it.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me that if I double my sample size, if I double the number of people I study, I might be mathematically guaranteeing I find the wrong answer?
If you're using the standard tools we've relied on for the last decade, yes.
Wow.
It's this phenomenon called inflation. And in the context we're talking about today, increasing your sample size doesn't just help you find the true disease genes. It creates a linear increase in false positives.
So the richer the data set, the more hallucinations we get.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. Our standard statistical tools are essentially hallucinating connections. They're seeing signals where there's only noise just because the human genome is so incredibly complex. That is terrifying. I mean, that implies we could be spending millions of dollars chasing drug targets that don't actually exist.
That's exactly the stake here.
Yeah.
We need to figure out how to tell the difference between a true biological signal, a gene that actually causes a disease, and just statistical noise.
Well, fortunately for my anxiety levels, we aren't just here to talk about the problem. We're here to celebrate a team that claims they've fixed it.
Today, we celebrate the work of Yan-Yu Liang, Festus Niasini, and Hai-Kyung Im. This is a real heavy-hitting team from the University of Chicago's Section of Genetic Medicine and the Argonne National Laboratory.
And they published a paper very recently, February 5, 2026, in the American Journal of Human Genetics. The title is a bit of a mouthful.
It is.
A gene-specific variance control approach corrects polygenicity-driven inflation observed in transcriptome-wide association studies.
It is a mouthful, but every single word in that title really matters. Especially variance control. That's the key. That's the solution.
Okay, before we get to the solution, though, we have to understand the tool they're fixing. They mentioned TWAS. T-W-A-S.
Right. Transcriptome-wide association studies.
Now, I know GWAS, genome-wide association studies. Are these just cousins?
Think of them as siblings, maybe, but with different jobs. And to really get TWAS, you do have to start with TWAS.
Okay, so GWAS is the big dragnet. You scan the DNA of, say, a million people, and you look for spelling errors variants that show up more often in sick people than in healthy people.
Exactly. GWAS finds the markers. But here's the catch, the limitation. GWAS gives you a zip code. It tells you, hey, there's a problem somewhere on chromosome 6 that's associated with height.
But it doesn't tell you what is actually happening at that address.
Right. It identifies the neighborhood, but not the culprit. Could be the butler, the gardener, a broken window. TWAS has no idea. It doesn't tell you the mechanism.
And that's where TWAS comes in.
That's where TWAS comes in. The T stands for transcriptome. We're not just looking at the static DNA anymore. We're looking at gene expression.
Which is like the volume knob, how much a gene is being turned on or off.
Correct. So TWAS tries to identify the mediator, tries to figure out, is this disease caused because gene X is being cranked up way too high, or is gene Y turned down too low?
And that seems like a much better strategy for developing drugs, because if I know gene X is the problem, I can try to make a drug to block gene X.
You can't make a drug to block a zip code.
Right. So the goal is to find that biological lever you can actually pull. The paper even mentions this goes beyond genes to something called XWAS.
Yeah, that's just extending the logic to other things. You can look at proteins, metabolites, even brain images from an MRI.
Okay, so on paper, TWAS sounds way better. It gets us closer to the actual biology. So where does it all go wrong?
It goes off the rails because of a single concept, polygenicity.
polygenicity. So many genes.
Yes, but many is a bit of an understatement. Most of the traits we really care about, height, BMI, schizophrenia, heart disease, they aren't caused by one broken gene. They're caused by thousands, maybe tens of thousands, of tiny, tiny genetic nudges.
So it's not a single smoking gun. It's death by a thousand cuts.
Or a thousand whispers creating a shout. And here's the conflict. The statistical tests we use, like linear regression, they were built for a simpler world. They sort of assume that most of the genome is quiet.
But for a complex disease, the genome is not quiet. It's a cacophony.
It's a cacophony, exactly. When a trait is highly polygenic, you have thousands of variants all exerting a tiny influence. This creates a huge amount of what you could call background noise in the data.
And the standard TOBUS tools mistake that noise for a specific signal.
That's it. So the tool sees a spike and says, aha, gene Z is the cause.
But really, gene Z is just an innocent bystander caught up in the noise.
It's even worse than that. Gene Z might have absolutely nothing to do with the disease, but because of the mathematical structure of all that background noise, it looks significant.
Now, surely people knew this was an issue. This feels like a massive oversight.
We had suspicions. I mean, it wasn't a total secret. In fact, there were previous attempts to fix it. There was a method called BACON.
BACON, great name.
Great acronym, but a flawed assumption. BACON assumed that for any given disease, only a small number of genes really matter. What they call a sparse architecture.
Which would work for something simple, maybe like cystic fibrosis.
Right. But it fails spectacularly for something like schizophrenia. If thousands of genes are involved, you can't assume sparsity. So BACON was just too lenient. It was letting all these false positives slip through.
So the Chicago team decided, okay, we need to prove once and for all that these tools are broken. And to do that, they built a trap.
A simulation trap. This is really the core of their methodology, and it's clever. To prove the tools were hallucinating, they didn't even use real diseases at first. They created null traits.
Fake diseases.
Exactly. They started with something they called the minimal example. Before even touching the big biobank data, they just stripped the biology down to the absolute basics.
Like a stress test in a wind tunnel or something.
Perfect analogy. They simulated a trait using just 999 genetic variants. That's tiny. And they assumed these variants were totally independent. No complicated stuff. Just a clean room experiment.
A spherical cow in a vacuum, the simplest possible version of genetics?
Right. And even in that perfect simplified vacuum, as soon as they introduced polygenicity, just the idea that many genes influence the trait a tiny bit, the standard methods started hallucinating associations.
So it wasn't the messy real-world data causing the problem, it was the statistical method itself. The math was just flawed at its core.
Precisely. But they didn't stop there. They wanted to show just how bad this gets in the real world. So they took real DNA data from the UK biobank, over 300,000 people.
So real people, real genetics.
Real genetics, but they simulated a trait. Let's just call it Syndrome X. And Syndrome X was just random noise mixed with some general genetic effects. And crucially, they set it up so that Syndrome X had zero causal link to any specific gene's expression.
So they rigged the game. There is no gene that causes Syndrome X.
None. Zero.
So if I run my TW's tool, my metal detector, over this pile of data, it should be silent. It should find nothing.
If the tools work, yes. But when they ran the standard software, the detector just went wild.
It found metal where there was only wood.
It was a massive oops moment. When they tested a non-polygenic null trait, so pure random noise with no genetic basis at all, the tools worked fine. The detector stayed silent.
Okay, so if a disease is totally random, we're safe. Not that any are.
But the second they tested the polygenic null traits, these fake diseases caused by thousands of tiny nudges but no specific gene, the false positives just exploded. The tools were flagging significant genes for a trait that didn't even exist.
And this brings us back to that terrifying paradox from the beginning. They actually found a formula for this failure, didn't they?
They did. They discovered that the error rate, it grows linearly. And it's based on two things. First, sample size, or annular.
This is the part I still can't wrap my head around. The more people in your study,
the worse the inflation gets.
That just feels so wrong. We fight for grant money to get more participants because we think it makes the science stronger. But you're telling me that without this fix, doubling my sample size just doubles my hallucinations.
Essentially, yes. In a normal study, more data reduces random noise. But here, the noise is the signal. It's that polygenic background. So adding more data just amplifies the background. It makes it look more and more like a specific cause.
Oh, okay. And what was the second factor?
Heritability, or tuichitu. So the more genetic the trait is, the worse the inflation gets.
So psychiatric conditions, which are highly heritable and very complex,
are the absolute perfect storm for this kind of error. Mm. You have huge sample sizes, high heritability, high complexity.
Now, the authors identified a specific parameter that drives all this. They call it phi, the Greek letter phi. This is where I need you to help me out. They say phi is gene specific. What does that mean?
This is my favorite part of the paper. Think of phi as the loudmouth factor.
The loudmouth factor. Okay, I like it.
Not every gene behaves the same way. Some genes, just based on their genetic architecture, how many other variants regulate them, how connected they are, they're just naturally prone to picking up all that background noise and screaming, "I'm significant, look at me."
Even when they have nothing to do with the disease, they're just drama queens.
They're a total drama queens. They're antennas for polygenic noise. So a gene with a high phi value, a high loudmouth factor, is going to give you a false positive almost every single time you study a complex disease, unless you tell it to be quiet.
So you can't just apply a blanket fix across the whole genome. You have to tune the volume knob for every single gene individually.
Precisely. And this debunks a huge myth in the field. For a long time, people thought these errors came from prediction error. Basically, that our measurements of gene expression were just too messy. You know, bad data in, bad data out.
Right, blaming the measurement tools.
But the authors proved that's not it. Noisy data just lowers your power. It makes it harder to find true things. It doesn't create false things.
Mm-hmm.
The real villain is the polygenic background of the disease itself, combined with these high-fi loudmouth genes.
Okay, so we have a metal detector that beeps at wood because the wood has a loudmouth factor. We know the problem. How on earth do we fix it?
The authors propose a solution called variance control.
Which sounds very responsible.
It is, and it's elegant. Since they know the inflation follows that linear formula based on sample size, heritability, and that loudmouth factor phi.
They can just reverse the math.
They just reverse the math. They recalibrate the scale. They came up with a formula to adjust the test statistic. Basically, they divide the z-score by the square root of $1 plus NC dot H2 C dot phi.
Okay, you don't need to memorize the formula, listeners, but what they're doing is building a kind of noise-canceling headphone for the data set.
That's a great way to put it. It uses the specific profile of each gene to filter out all that background chatter. It gets rid of the false positives without killing the true signals.
And they proved this works on real data, right? They didn't just stay in their simulation.
No, they went back to the real world. They took 110 real traits, cardiometabolic diseases, psychiatric disorders, autoimmune diseases, and they reran everything with a new variance control.
And this is where we get to the bloodbath I was worried about. What happened to all the discoveries we've made over the last decade?
Well, it really depends on the disease, and this is fascinating. When they looked at the highly polygenic traits, things like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, the number of significant genes just plummeted.
So they just vanished.
Poof, gone. It turns out a huge chunk of those risk genes we've been studying were just noise dressed up as a signal. The loudmouth genes were screaming and we were all listening.
That is a little depressing, but also necessary. What about other diseases?
This is the good news. For immune traits like lupus or Crohn's disease, the signals remain robust.
Why are they different?
Because those diseases are biologically different. They aren't just a thousand whispers. They often have a real smoking gun. Strong, specific genetic drivers. The variance control tool is smart enough to see the difference. It didn't just nuke the data, it cleaned it.
It separated the wheat from the chaff.
Exactly. And when they compared it to bacon, that older method variance control was much more precise. It handled the complexity where bacon just couldn't keep up.
This sounds like a tool every researcher needs to be using, like yesterday. Is it hard to implement?
No, and that's the best part. The authors did the heavy lifting. They updated the main software packages people use, Predixkin and S-Predixkin, and they've already calculated all the phi values for genes and metabolites and put them in a public database.
So if you're a researcher, you don't have to derive the math yourself. You just update your software.
Ideally, yeah. It turns a really complex statistical correction into just a default setting.
This really forces us to confront the reality of the last decade of genomics research, doesn't it?
It forces a major reevaluation. I mean, we are entering the era of mega biobanks, the All of Us program, the UK biobank.
Mm.
These data sets are getting bigger every single day.
And if we hadn't found this flaw and fixed it?
If we hadn't fixed this, that linear inflation would have become deafening. In 5 years, through the study of a million participants, every single gene in the genome would look significant for a disease like schizophrenia.
Which is completely useless. If everything is a priority, nothing is.
Exactly. You can't design drugs if the entire genome is your target.
So the take-home message here isn't just about math, it's about the price of complexity.
It is. As we study more complex human traits with bigger and bigger data sets, the background noise of the genome creates a trap. But this paper gives us the map to escape it.
By acknowledging the loudmouth factor.
Right. By using that gene-specific correction, that phi value, we can finally ensure that when we tell a patient or a drug company, this gene causes this disease, we're actually telling the truth.
It restores credibility to big data. It does make you wonder, though. We've spent billions on drug targets based on these significant genes over the last 10 years.
That's the really uncomfortable question looming over this paper, isn't it?
If those targets were actually just mathematical ghosts,
yeah,
then we've been designing keys for locks that don't even exist.
It's a humbling thought. But, you know, better to find out now than another $1 billion down the line.
Absolutely. A necessary course correction for the entire field. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Chase the signal in a neon storm. Bigger crowds, the louder the noise gets warm. Every tiny whisper starts to feel like fate. When the room is bright, you overestimate. Hold up, check the meter, check the floor. Is it truth or hype at the core? Let the numbers breathe, let the glare subside. We can tune the lens, we can read it right.
Till the light.